Scott.
I got there first.
And this is episode 87 of Frankly, My Dear. This week's episode is brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions and their new film, Dirt Cheap Therapy. We reviewed it a couple weeks ago.
Still that one?
The DVD's still available on their website, and we liked it.
Like, whoa, what's going on? Did I win a prize?
No.
HP update?
HP wants to update.
But we got a lot of, like...
HP gets denied.
We got a lot of time on this Dirt Cheap Therapy.
It's true. This is their big one.
I was like, oh no, we have to watch a movie every week now.
No, apparently one a month.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
But also, we've talked about Shadow Dog a lot. We're really glad.
No, it's good. Yeah, like, I'm just lazy.
And they do, they also do audio plays. And so they've got a couple that I wanted to highlight. And April Love Day, Carly, Dancy, Fair Play. If you go to shadowdogproductions.com, they have a film section or a video play section and an audio play section.
They're a legit company.
I know.
It's crazy. I don't know how they found this backwoods podcast.
I'm excited for them. As I talk with our contact there, he tells me about some deals that they have in the works. Uh-huh. Totally not allowed to talk about them, but I think they're going to be big. I'll just leave it at that.
Stop talking.
What are we doing this week?
It's another You Choose episode.
Two in a row.
Yeah, we're pretty much up to date now,
we're
right?
We're catching up. Well, next week we'll probably do a You Choose again, and then I think we'll be caught up.
That's awesome. We are really, really good at that.
So, first I want to apologize to Allison at Nerd Vampire. Her film, Devil's Backbone, was next in line to be reviewed. And it's going to be on next week's episode because we're still trying to track down a copy of it.
Track down a copy. Like, we're just waiting on Netflix.
Right.
Right. It sounds like, so complicated.
No, we're just, it didn't show up. So, so the ones we're doing this week is Uncle Thomas's Pick Young Adult, Rebecca's Choice Pie, Jess Rogers' The Big White. She mailed us a physical DVD of the film she wanted us to review.
Yeah, so now we...
Now we own it. It was awesome.
That may be great.
We'll get into that.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, Whitney didn't love it.
Spoiler alert, you didn't either.
Spoiler alert, not enough to bring it up in the intro.
Really?
I haven't been thinking about it.
I hate it.
I'm surprised we even got through the sponsor before you started talking shit.
Okay, keep going.
And then The Silent Partner, which was Dan Heaton's pick from Public Transportation Snob. So that's the order we're doing them in. Stick around. Our first writer this week is the one and only Uncle Thomas. Uncle Thomas says, "Hey, FMD. It's been a while, but I have been listening, as only Steve Perry can sing faithfully. Watched the movie trailers this morning, and I wanted to share my thoughts with you about four of them. First, Flight. It looked and felt awesome till the very last scene, and then I remembered Zemeckis is a dope and I hate most of his movies. Farewell, My Queen. Super hot chicks play dress up and kissing each other. I am now officially interested in the French Revolution." Third, Wreck-It Ralph. Christmas Day cannot come soon enough. We'll see this one on opening day.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph looks good.
Fourth, Music from the Big House. The tagline is, "Music is my escape." Prisoners serving life sentences learning to play instruments in order to get through their time in prison. Powerful trailer. If you've got the time, check them out and tell us what you think of them. And are there any trailers you've seen that I should check out? Love the podcast. Love you two more. Thomas.
I've seen the Wreck-It Ralph trailer, but other than that, I hadn't heard of any of the other ones.
Flight is about Denzel Washington. He plays a airline pilot who the plane starts to go down.
Mm-hmm.
He pulls off an incredible maneuver that all the simulations... pretty much, yeah, exactly. But all the simulations said there's no way to do it. Somehow he does it. Saves everybody. They find out he has alcohol in his system. Not that he's like necessarily drunk while flying. He just has it in his system, and they start coming after him as a villain instead of a hero.
So it's a drama.
Yeah, it's a drama.
Not a, like, action movie.
No.
Cool. It looks good. That sounds kind of cool. But what has Zemeckis done again?
Zemeckis has done a lot of animated films lately.
Didn't he do, like, What About Bob?
I can't remember who did What About Bob, but like you know him from Back to the Future.
Oh, like okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, so not everything he's done has been bad.
No, but he was going to do. He's done all those the Polar Express, those bad motion capture films.
Oh, that sounds like he just maybe he got obsessed with the wrong thing.
Right.
I don't know. As far as like trailers to watch, I would say The Master. Right? The
new
Paul Thomas Anderson movie with Joaquin Phoenix. It doesn't give anything away. In fact, I read the description on IMDb and it literally, like, it throws you off track. I've been saying literally a lot lately. It's been horrible.
I think it's Parks and Recreation.
Probably. It kind of throws you off track as to what it's going to be about, but, like, Joaquin Phoenix is awesome in it. Like, he's not really saying anything, but he's, like, amazing in it. It's worth watching.
It's gonna be his comeback film for
sure.
Well,
honestly, just the trailer alone is his comeback for me. Like, I think the trailer is almost a standalone short film.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Oh, that's a good point.
I really loved it.
And it's kind of shot like that.
Yeah.
It's not your generic trailer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so I want to get on this. Zemeckis did A Christmas Carol, Beowulf, and Polar Express. Those are his last three movies.
Oh, okay.
He was going to remake The Yellow Submarine, but after these three didn't do as well as he thought. And then I think after Mars Needs Moms bombed.
Oh, he did that too.
He didn't do that one, but that technology, like, they're like, people don't want to see these creepy motion capture.
It's the eyes.
It's the eyes.
Yeah, there's this, like, article. It might have been Donna Haraway. I don't know. It's this theorist wrote about it, like, about cyborgs and how you have to be, in order for a cyborg to be approachable at all, which, like, she's talking about these movies too. She's talking about Polar Express specifically.
Right.
They need to be different enough from humans.
Yep.
But it's, like, with just a slight off in the eyes, it really creeps people out.
What I don't understand is how something like the Polar Express got that far into production without the people, because everybody I know agrees it's creepy. How does the people making it, are they just too close
yeah,
to
probably
it?
Just have seen
but
it too
focus
much.
Groups, it's pretty insane. But Wreck-It Ralph, if, for those who don't know, that's like the next big Disney cartoon, and it's gonna be awesome. It's about a video game
bad guy
who decides he doesn't want to be a bad guy anymore.
Well, and the best part about it is it's John C. Reilly doing
the voice
work, which is so funny.
And I don't want to give,
because he has such a distinctive voice, like he's just John C. Reilly.
Yeah, but it's funny watching him play this like big, muscly,
yeah,
action bad guy. I don't want to give anything away in the trailer, but there are other video game cameos in one scene in particular. They're fantastic. Wreck-It Ralph is going to be in my top 10 of the year, I would bet. So
you can watch The Baby Makers, like the most disappointing trailer I've ever seen.
Oh my god.
Not that I had high hopes for Olivia Wilde's new movie.
Olivia Munn.
No, it's Wilde.
Isn't it Olivia Munn from G4?
I can't tell the difference between them.
One is Asian.
She's kinda. She's like vaguely Asian.
She's half.
Right?
She's half Asian.
This one has some freckles. Oh, Jason Sudeikis is dating one of them, and one of them thinks she's a nerd, but obviously isn't.
That you're looking for the nerd.
Really?
That's
she's the
Susan
one in The Baby Makers?
I think I'm going to look it up.
Anyway,
I could be wrong.
Paul Schneider is like, had such potential. Like, he was in...
Give him
all
some
the
background.
Real Girls. He was, okay, so he's the main character in All the Real Girls because him and Gordon Green and the guy, Danny McBride, they all went to film school together. And so they made this movie, All the Real Girls. He was fantastic. He was in Assassination of Jesse James by the Robert Redford, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, anyway, the one with Brad Pitt. And then he was on Parks and Recreation, so it seemed like, hey, maybe he'll get like some choice in the roles that he's going to pick. And then he made this Baby Makers movie. So I don't know what's going on with him.
And before anybody thinks, well, maybe that's what he wanted to make, watch the trailer. There's no way
There's
anybody
no way
wanted
that guy
to
would've...
make this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, no. Anyway. Can we move on?
That's Olivia Wilde.
Like, literally, I can't tell the difference.
Well, that's Olivia Wilde.
Is she,
and
okay.
Only Olivia Wilde. And then here's Olivia Munn.
Oh, it's Olivia Munn in that movie.
Yep.
Because she has some freckles. That's the only way I can tell. I don't know. Girls, I have the hardest time with, like, when I teach.
Brown hair versus black hair doesn't...
No. When I teach, I can't, well, because their hair changes so much.
Okay, that's a good
point. So when I teach, I cannot remember the girls' names for the first, like, 2.5 months. But I know all the boys, because the boys look the same every day, and the girls are, like, radically different every day. Their costumes change, and, like, their hair's up, their hair's down. Like, how... You're supposed to go by their nose and their chin, or how are you supposed to know them?
You go by their boobs, just like all the rest of us. Rebecca writes in and says, "Dears, Men in Black 3 opened on Memorial Day, May 28th this year. On June 9th this year, just a week later, I was flying from Salt Lake City to Sacramento, and the man sitting across the aisle from me was watching Men in Black 3 on his computer. The video appeared to be studio quality, not some video shot in theater. How is this possible?" Whitney and I were discussing this earlier.
The internet.
Yep, the internet.
Downloading.
It's all there. Why it doesn't have to be a camcorder in some crappy theater with people coughing and walking through.
Because it's people who worked on the production that are leaking it.
I think it just got leaked earlier. But I will say that most films, especially these big budget films, have a way of keeping things in track up until they start printing DVDs. So I think it's still pretty... regular to see bad camcorder films during the first couple months.
Mm-hmm.
It's until they ship those, their prints, to get them digitized, that's when things start popping up on the internet in full studio quality.
Not to reveal too much information, but it's happened before within a couple weeks that we've had access.
It definitely has. And it's just somebody getting in, usually higher up. You know, it's the same way that how every album is leaked these days. And it could be unfinished versions of the album if somebody that close to the project.
Do you think it's people that are just, like, mad at their bosses? Like, what's the motivation for them to leak it is always my question.
I don't know. I understand.
They just have highfalutin ideas about everybody having access to art.
Yeah, and I think just mostly they are in a position where they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a big thing, and they don't feel they're going to get caught. But I just feel that I would never upload a film to be downloaded. I get downloading it along with, like, 50,000 or 50 million other people. But to be, like, the guy with his name attached to it...
But it's not a moral thing.
No, it's a fear of punishment.
Yeah, jail. Because, like...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I would... If there was no punishment, I would upload everything I had access to.
Right. Because you want it for free.
Yeah.
I understand that.
So I'm going to give it to other people for
Yeah, me. I understand that. Yeah. Yeah, but it's a penalty thing for sure for me. So, and I would think that if you are in a place where...
They make enough on the toys.
But I feel that if you're in a place where you can get Men in Black 3 early enough where you can get it out there, your job's at stake too. Because your job has to have something related to this. So, I don't know.
Are there any other emails?
There are. Okay. You were miming something to me. I didn't know what
you... I was saying, look at the time. It's been 10 minutes on 2 emails. We probably should hurry.
Wrap it up. I was trying to keep that behind the scenes. Wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Sometimes I do that.
Jess Rogers says, "Hey, Franklies, I'm glad you liked HUD. I saw it for my 30 days of Oscars and loved it, too. It felt like a classic Western, but yet does have a lot of different stories. I knew Whit would enjoy drooling however insanely hot Paul Newman is. But you'd probably enjoy the stories they tell as well. Loss of cattle, HUD as an asshole, Lon trying to figure out life. I love your description of the rape." I don't remember what our description of the rape was, but she says, "I do think Alma and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, of course, the only Buffy we ever talk about on this show."
Yeah, we were comparing it to the rape in Buffy or the Attempted. They're both attempted.
"Both rise above the attacks, but both do it, but it dramatically changes their relationships. Definitely has to be made a comparison. But I think HUD was drunk and actually thought Alma would go for it. But Spike wanted to punish Buffy for not loving him."
Yeah.
Hmm.
He
doesn't have a soul. Yeah, I don't give a fuck if he's a vampire. He's not a protagonist. Mm-hmm. Not in something I want to watch.
Yeah.
"Great episode. I'll send another You Choose pick in soon. Please forgive any typos." New writer inner.
Okay, this is...
Adam.
Adam Rabies.
That's not his last name.
Rabby?
I've never met him.
All right.
This is something, I don't know him in real life, and you don't either.
So I'm being a jerk, is what you're saying to me?
No, not at all. I'm just saying, like, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it is cool. All right, good morning, or perhaps evening to you, frankly, my dear Podcast Inc. I just listened to a few episodes, was recommended by Allison from Nerd Vampire, and really love your podcast. Here are some thoughts on the Avengers from a comic book fan who doesn't really care about the Avengers, but just interesting tidbits. About Hawkeye, I'm pretty sure that him being a villain for most of the movie is a throwback to how he actually joined the Avengers. Hawkeye busts into Avenger Mansion. Yeah, they had a mansion. Do they all live together? They're like roommates?
I've never heard of the mansion
before. That is awesome.
I knew the X-Men had a mansion. I never knew. That's so awesome. Avengers did too. That's great.
Okay, and he picks a fight with the Avengers. After a tussle, he ollies out and eventually comes back and saves the Avengers from some other thing, and they like him so much they let him join. No one knows how Nick Fury actually hurt his eye. It's one of the longest kept secrets in the Marvel Universe. That's interesting. I didn't know that. I thought they were just making him more boring than he had to be.
More boring with the eye patch?
Well, just not going into his backstory at all with the eye patch.
Got it.
About Robin from How I Met Your Mother, I don't exactly know her name. Her name is Maria Hill, and in the comics she takes over S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while before Iron Man takes over. She's like an in-between, like, she is boring.
She's the assistant manager.
Yeah, last thing, she's the project manager. Last thing, because I love Animal Man. Animal Man essentially taps into nearby animals and borrows their powers. In the first issue of his new series, he borrows the napping abilities of a cat. That's awesome. But the new Animal Man is definitely worth checking out if you enjoy the films of David Cronenberg. Body horror all the way down. Seriously freakish stuff. Is he talking about the new, like, the new 52 Animal Man?
Probably.
I'm going to read it. Thanks for making a cool podcast, Adam.
Cool.
You are welcome.
Animal Man has gotten way more love on Frankly, My Dear, than I
didn't know so many people knew about Animal Man. I thought it was just some weird one.
I want to say that, Adam is our You Choose winner this week. So, Adam, the way this works is anytime somebody writes in listener feedback and, we will draw a name out of a hat, your name was pulled, and now you get to pick a movie for us to watch during a You Choose episode, just like the one we're doing right now. Any movie, just email us and let us know which one it was. All right. And, I believe that is it. Which movie did we say we were going to review first?
Young Adult.
What are you doing back in Mercury? Or you move back, or?
Of course not. Gross.
Oh, yeah. I'm up on the 11th floor, and I'm watching the cruisers below.
Psychotic prom queen, bitch.
So Uncle Thomas picked Young Adult, which is a Jason Reitman, Diablo Cody production. Stars Charlize Theron, Patrick Wilson, and Patton Oswalt.
Patrick Wilson is that guy who plays the gay Mormon in Angels in America. So now every time I see him, I'm like, hey, look, it's that gay Mormon.
Yeah.
he does. Like, that is perfect casting. He does look like a Mormon.
But, and that's also, like, really the only thing I still know him from, even though I've seen him in so many other things.
Oh, yeah. You know him from, like, Pacific Heights, too, though. Remember how much you liked that movie where he's neighbors with Samuel L. Jackson, and Samuel L. Jackson starts terrorizing them?
Oh, no. You're thinking of Lakeview Terrace.
Okay. Yeah, Pacific Heights is the other one where the guy moves into their basement and starts terrorizing
Michael Keaton.
Them. Yes. Same thing.
The thing about those, like, evil neighbor movies, that was really, like, I'm not scared of Freddy Krueger. Never have been. Not scared of Jason, not scared of Michael Myers.
Those are, like, the reasons you don't want to buy a house. Because
I'm afraid. Terrified. I'm afraid of who I'm going to get stuck next to. It could make your life hell.
Yeah. You can't live your life afraid, man. I just read a Facebook quote about that.
I don't want to hear
that.
Or a
Pinterest quote.
No one wants to hear that.
It was about how Jesus said, don't be fearful all the time. So Jesus didn't want you to live your life in fear.
Huh.
So don't. So Jesus doesn't want you to.
You got me.
Okay. Young Adult, huh? What are we talking about?
Baby makers? What are we talking about?
Oh, no. So this was the first time I've liked Charlize Theron maybe...
In 10 years?
Maybe ever.
maybe ever for you. You liked her in Cider House Rules, though, right?
Oh, she's so cute in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But she was, like, perfect for this role. Like, I believed every second of it, which maybe is really mean to her. Because maybe she's just really talented and can pull that off, but...
I think honestly, though, your distaste of her and putting her in a semi-villainous role really made you like the film a
lot. Well, she's been in villainous roles before. The part about this that felt real was, like, the constant manicures and the tiny little dog that lives in her purse and... the
selfishness.
Drinking and the selfishness. And
that's a lot of projecting.
The outfits and the hair extensions and blah, blah, blah.
What
I don't know,
started
maybe,
your distaste of Charlize Theron?
I don't know. I just don't like her face.
Just don't like her face. Of all
there
the things
to not
like.
There are people you hate.
There are definitely people I hate. I just want to know why you hate
like,
Charlize
Like, why do you
Theron.
Hate Gwyneth Paltrow?
Emma. The movie Emma. It was a ripoff of Clueless. And it made me mad when I was like 13.
I would have to remember what Charlize Theron has been in, and don't you dare pull up the list.
I will read every one, starting with 2002's Waking Up in Reno.
But you have it already. But I'd have to like go through and figure out why I don't like her. I just don't like her. Yeah.
Will you give her another chance after this movie?
No, probably not. I think this movie was like, unless she plays the same role again, like young adult too.
Is her involvement in Prometheus making you not want to see Prometheus?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But Michael Fassbender's involvement in it is making me want to see it. Because he's cool. He has that giant mouth. It's so expressive.
So this movie is about...
I like him because of his face, and I hate her because of her face. Evens out. Okay, keep going. This movie, yes.
Sexist. It's about a children's literature writer from a tiny little town in Minnesota.
Literature ghostwriter.
Yeah, she doesn't even get credited for this stuff. But it's big enough in her to make her small town jealous and treat her like a little... movie star.
Even though she's just from, like, Minneapolis.
Yeah, she's been to Minneapolis.
We can't say it right.
Minneapolis?
Is it Minneapolis or Minneapolis?
I always say Minneapolis.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Who cares?
Couldn't spell it. Right. Couldn't spell it if you asked me.
And we're from Salt Lake, and we're just
can't spell that either. And she comes back into town and with the sole mission of getting back with her high school ex-boyfriend after her life has fallen apart.
Well, and... she gets that idea because he sends her a baby announcement. So he is having a baby, and he's living this, like, beautiful little suburban life. And
married, yeah, baby on the way.
Super happy.
She does not care.
No, she's going back to ruin his life. And she meets Patton Oswalt, or reunites with him, a kid from her high school.
Yeah, he plays this guy named Matt who was the victim of a hate crime back in high school. Everybody thought he was gay, and these three rednecks went and beat him up really badly. And so it was considered a hate crime until it came out that he wasn't gay. And then no one cared anymore. So he's left semi-disabled. It's like he's disabled that he can't work, but he can still move around. He like brews his own
crutches.
Star Wars beer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about that Star Wars beer. I hope that makes it to the market.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'm all for marketing.
So did you like this movie?
I did very much. I thought it was excellent.
All right, let's go. What's next?
Next. What about you?
I liked it. I liked that it was, it wasn't as, like, smooth and polished as Juno. And so, I was afraid of that for like, Diablo Cody's follow-up or whatever, that it would be kind of more of the same. And it's not at all. It's a completely different writing style, which I thought was really cool. Like, there aren't pop culture references, and there aren't... snazzy way of talking. It's like people are talking like actual people would. Horrible people, but still.
Right. And I even like the fact that she made the lead character a children's literature professional.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times, there are scenes where she's overhearing conversations of teens talking like Juno. And she, like, steals from them and writes down these, like,
yeah,
little
I didn't
things.
Even put
it's
that together.
Really subtle.
See, and I was thinking the only reason she's a children's literature author is so that, you know, she can make these... I thought that part was a little bit obvious to be like, see, she's still living in this age where all the things that mattered to her in high school matter to her still. And she still thinks the way that a spoiled high school student
Yeah, I think that selfish, she still relates with the selfishness.
And that part to me seemed a little bit, like, over the top.
Because it wasn't necessary. Mm-mm. She could have come back to that town for any reason. That was just something they slapped on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of everything that had to do with that, like her needing to finish her book by this date, her going to the bookstore and finding out she's not a big deal, her all this stuff like was just so extra and could have been cut. Anything that had to do with her book could have been cut.
Because it just seemed like sort of a metaphor that, I don't know if it got in the way, but it was just obvious.
It's a little distracting, but not the worst thing in the world.
No.
I like that this is, because she went on to do Jennifer's Body.
Oh, yeah, she did do that. So this wasn't her second
movie. It's not her follow-up, but it is her, like...
I didn't see that, Jennifer's Body.
But also, this is what Jason Reitman chose to do after making Up in the Air, which was Oscar-nominated and Oscar-winning, I believe.
I don't know. Probably maybe some of them won.
I think Best Supporting Actress.
Oh.
Maybe not. I can't remember. But anyway, it was interesting that this
I didn't really like Up in the Air all that much. I like parts of it, but... And you know what I did like about it was the ending. And I like the ending of this movie, too.
What was the ending?
That she doesn't change.
Yep.
But, like, she... she has this moment where you think she's going to. She has this, like, little moment of clarity. And then, like, the best part is that someone knocks it out of her. Like, she has... like some crony that's going to encourage all of her bad behavior again, and she's not going to change at all, and she's going to go back to Minneapolis and live her pampered life.
Yep.
With the hair extensions and the manicures.
And ruin anybody's life. Like, she hasn't learned a lesson not to do that. Like, if she...
Well, she probably ruins Patton Oswalt's on the way.
Yep.
Like, not only does she ruin Patrick Wilson's, but in that moment where she has clarity, it seems like she's not going to ruin anybody else's life, and then she does.
Yep. She's just sort of like just a mean creature, just a mean character.
So I guess in that way, I'm wondering, like, what the point of the movie is.
I thought it was good. I think you want to...
Just like a character study?
Sort of. You want to tell this story about compassion, and you want to tell this story about selfishness and selflessness, and don't
have
to have it...
What makes people happy.
Yeah, because the movie is sort of... cookie cutter until the end, and then the end throws a little twist on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's got it's as much validity as any other big mainstream Hollywood movie trying to tell a story about a not that complicated character.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? She's not that complicated.
No, not at all.
She's just I don't feel
that's
what
makes me I'll probably never watch this movie again.
And I didn't feel she was a character type.
No, it's just, like, there's not really any complications at all in the movie.
Right. Even when she's, like, about to make that realization, I was still like, but why are you making that realization? And then she doesn't. And then I was like, okay.
I feel like
I spent 90 minutes with, like, a pretty terrible human being, and I'm
like
happy.
I feel like I understood everything that happened in the movie. Like, a movie that I love and makes me want to watch it again, like Hud, I don't completely get on the first try, and there's a lot of different things going on, but this one had one arc and it happened and then it was over.
That's a really good point. I would watch it again for Patton Oswalt's performance. I wish he got more acting gigs.
I'd watch The Fan, maybe. What's that called? Big Fan?
Big Fan.
I'd watch that again, but I wouldn't watch this.
Cool. Well, those are our thoughts on Young Adult. It came out in 2011. If you've seen it, email us at franklymydearpodcast@gmail.com. And next up, we're going to review Pi, which was Rebecca's pick. Stick around.
If you graph the numbers of any system, patterns emerge. Therefore, there are patterns everywhere in nature.
Do you hear Kabbalah?
A paranoid mathematician searches for a key number that will unlock the universal patterns found in nature. 1998, Darren Aronofsky. Stars some guy that I've never heard of and I'll never see again. And it's Pi.
Was it a student film? That's what I'm guessing.
I don't know. This was
a right after film school film?
I think it was a right after film school.
This movie made perfect sense to me. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I think I got everything.
How many times have you seen it?
This is probably third, possibly fourth time seeing it all the way through.
Yeah,
How about you?
I think it's my second or third.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen it. It's been around. It's like one of those movies like Donnie Darko that people, when you first get into movies, you think it's like super amazing. I know you didn't, but it's like you get into all these sort of indie movies, and this is one of those. Like, that's absolutely really complicated, that you don't quite understand, that has some really cool visual things going for it.
And enough keywords dropped in where you're like, oh, they're speaking about something important.
Yeah, yeah, and not enough, and not very many people know about it either, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, you feel like really important watching it too. But that's not to say that I don't like it. That's just the original reason I saw it. I saw it with, like, that batch of movies, the Fight Clubs and the Donnie Darkos. My life and Ghost World, those movies.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, it was, I saw it in high school. My photography teacher brought it in and showed it to us.
That's interesting, because of the, like, super overexposure and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is that why?
Yeah, and so he put that on, and I watched it and hated it. And I've been very open about this. I did not get a taste in movies worth talking about until film school. Beforehand, I wanted Big Mama's House, and I wanted the first Kill Bill, not the second, and Pie was just too weird for me.
I always had very good taste.
You always had very good taste, and we're always very snobby about it.
Park was my favorite movie.
That's why I had lots of friends, and you had virtually none.
I had a million friends. I had so many friends. You can't even believe how many friends I had. And they all wanted to date me.
I can't believe it.
Every single one of them.
So the movie's filmed in black and white, and it's, what I didn't realize until watching it this time is how cohesive of a narrative it has.
Mm-hmm.
The story has a clear beginning, middle, and end, and it follows the regular Hollywood story structure. They're just talking about this complex numerology and maths pattern systems that just go over at, like, almost everyone's heads.
Even though you don't understand the math of it, you understand what's going on.
Definitely.
But here's the thing, it's not a math movie. It's not really about math. It's about, like, numerology.
Right.
Which is different, right?
Right.
And I guess they explain that in the movie, too.
Yeah. But he is a mathematician.
But mathematicians hate this movie. And Aaron hates this movie.
Really? We have a friend who's getting his PhD in math, and I didn't know he hated Pi.
Yeah. And people who, like, know about math don't like it. I'm sure is because people are like, oh, you like math? Have you seen Pi?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. I also wouldn't be surprised if the math wasn't just, like, based out of nothing.
It's weird. I guess he's looking for a pattern in Pi, like in the decimals of Pi. He's looking for a 216-digit number. But here's the thing. I don't understand why. Like, I never understand why. He's just slowly going crazy. The Hasidic people think that it's, like, the name of God, and, like, the other people think it's, like, the Wall Street number, but I don't know why he is doing it.
Well, he wanted, and at first he wants to find it in the stock market, just so he could break the stock market, so he can,
Is that why he wants it? I thought that was why that black woman wants it.
That, too, that he's working for.
Yeah, but he was looking for it before she contacts him.
Right. I think he just knew that he was looking for patterns. And then that 216 one that he gets but accidentally throws away, it's brought up later by the Hasidic Jew. I can't remember his name. But they're looking for it in the patterns of the Torah.
Yeah, so you just said other people are looking for it for some reason, but I never understand his motive for looking for it.
All of his monologues have to do with the fact that he is just obsessed with it.
Yeah.
So it's a MacGuffin, and he's, like, just looking for it for the same reason as everybody else.
Uh-huh.
Just, I think he's just become obsessed with it. And so I don't think he really cares who it ends up going to in the end.
Uh-huh.
He just wants to find it.
Do you know, you have the IMDb page up, right?
Yep.
Do you know who that old guy is? Who's, like, mentor? I forgot to look him up.
Oh, I will look for it. I can't remember what that guy's name is.
It might be. Let's not do that on the podcast, then.
It's Mark Margolis.
Yeah, but I don't remember what he is in.
He's in The Wrestler, Requiem for a Dream, Black Swan, all the good movies.
Everything. All the Aronofsky movies.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Aronofsky, yeah, he went on to make The Wrestler, Black Swan, Requiem for a Dream, all these big movies. Do you see that in Pi?
Yeah, you see it. You see the obsession, and you see the interesting art decisions. Even though he was probably on, like, a much smaller budget than he gets for those other movies, he still, like, in each of those movies, there's a new take on the visual aspects of it. Like, he's always experimenting with that, and I think you can see the beginnings of that in Pi. What about you?
Definitely. This totally seems like Aronofsky to me. This, and I loved Black Swan. We reviewed it. We both loved it. Yeah. It was both in our top films of the year. I want to watch that again. You know, I've never seen Requiem for a Dream.
Me neither, because someone told me the end and how horrible it is. Something with lesbians and a dildo, or they're not really lesbians, or something like that. And I never wanted to see it when I was a kid, because I'm like, oh no, lesbians and a dildo. But now I don't know if it would be that shocking.
I always just hear that it's, like, incredibly depressing.
Yeah, so I've it's just drug, it for that drug people, right?
Had I known there were lesbians and dildos.
I know Jared Leto's in it.
Ew, never mind.
Jordan Catalano.
That does not sell me. It's like Ellen Burstyn.
Wait, isn't he? Actually, Jennifer I'm not Connelly. Even sure.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, yes, okay.
So, yeah, I never saw that, but I'm a Aronofsky fan overall.
Me too.
And watching Pi on this rewatch made me love it. I don't know. I understand why people liked it as a Donnie Darko type, like, pseudo-intellectual indie film.
But once you get past all that and you try and not think about who likes it, still, it's a good movie.
Yeah, it really is.
The hard part for me is knowing who likes it.
Yeah, I know no, that's, I can understand.
That's mean, but...
No, it's just because, like, if you are really, really into film, everybody I know pretty much has had that transitionary period. So it's hard for me to, it's sort of like if somebody, this is so snobby too, if somebody comes up and says, like, I love Donnie Darko, it's the smartest movie ever made. Mm-hmm. I know that you're at that mid-range. Like, you're willing to watch more obscure movies. You probably love Fight Club. And you probably, you know what you're supposed to like at that level.
And I was that for a long, long time. Those were the kinds of movies I sought out. It's
because
just...
you can't go...
And it's not that we're saying those are bad movies either. It's just that there's
It's a little cliched in our circle.
Yes. And there's a... There's usually a time when you get past them, too.
And you get past it, and also you learn how to talk about movies a little better than the people. I think that's the hard thing, is the people who are, like, really loving the Pies, the Mementos.
Memento, yes. American Beauty.
At least when
we were that age.
Amelie. I'll put Amelie.
Oh, I hate Amelie. Wait, no. The other ones I like, still.
Right.
But not American Beauty. I hate American Beauty, but, like, I don't know if that one really fits in. Amelie, I can't stand that movie. Oh, I hate that movie. That girl's so cute. Except for there's this Home Movies. Have you seen... Okay, so there's this cartoon called Home Movies from Cartoon Network. It was on Adult Swim, and they do an Amelie, like, parody where he's, like, bringing little knickknacks from people's childhoods to them to try and make them cry. That's the only time I've liked Amelie.
Okay. I don't even know what we were talking about.
She's so damn cute and her stupid little face.
I'm over saying that we talk better about film than anybody else.
She's the Forrest Gump of French cinema.
You know you just confused somebody. Why? They were just like, but I love Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is the best movie ever made.
Well, then you'll like Amelie if you can, like, watch a foreign film.
Those are our thoughts on Pi. Totally recommend it, but don't think it's the best movie ever, because it's not. It is just awesome.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thanks, Rebecca. And next up is Jess Rogers from real-insight.com and the Real Insight podcast. She chose The Big White. Stick around.
How is she?
Some days are better than others.
I'm not crazy, Paul.
No, sweetie, we're going to find the best specialist. You're going to be okay. I promise. You leave everything up to me.
So The Big White is a 2005 film starring Robin Williams and Holly Hunter, Woody Harrelson, and Giovanni Ribisi.
And that girl from Drag Me to Hell. What's her name?
Oh, yeah, I forgot
Allison
her name.
Allison something?
Lohman.
Yeah, I like her.
I like her, too.
Remember when she was in that one... Tim Burton movie with Ewan McGregor. Oh. You really don't know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's like, there's like a big fish.
Oh, I forgot all about that movie.
That's a good movie.
She's the only way I will ever watch that movie again is if someone chooses it as a You Choose pick. And even then, no promises.
I liked it.
I know, everybody did.
Yeah,
I did not.
It was sweet. It had heart.
Yeah. So basically what happens in this film is Robin Williams works as a travel agent, and his brother has gone missing in Alaska, which is where the whole movie takes place and where he lives. The law, because of how often people leave for long periods of time, is that someone has to be missing for 7 years before insurance companies can claim them as dead and cash out on insurance policies. So Robin Williams' brother is been gone for a long time, and he's trying to pay for his own wife's Tourette syndrome therapy. They don't ever get into what can help that, but
Whether it's actually Tourette's. Like, you're not quite sure. She might just be a little
going crazy.
Just crazy.
So that's Holly Hunter. So she has a lot of tics and yells things at random and might be going crazy. And at times, that storyline is really touching.
Like
there's
when?
Times when she starts crying in the kitchen and just says, "I'm not crazy," and he starts crying and says, "I know," like,
or
we're going to get you
the best
help. Or when
he plugs in the vacuum, she's vacuuming and he doesn't have it on, and so he plugs it in
right, which
without
is,
saying anything.
Which isn't Tourette's, as
no.
far as I know.
Nope.
As far as I know, you always, with Tourette's, you know when the vacuum's on. So who knows, but he wants to get her the best help that she can.
Uh-huh.
And
can't afford it, so he tries to cash in on the life insurance, but they say he can't because the brother hasn't been missing long enough.
Right. Cut to him finding a dead body in a dumpster, tying bacon to its face, dragging it out in the middle of the snow, and staging a wolf attack. And that's how you get the ball rolling in this movie.
Yeah, to try to say that that's the brother, and so get the life insurance. I don't understand about this movie.
Right.
Is I feel like they don't know how insurance works or how police work.
Right.
Or how death certificates work. Like, wouldn't you
I mean DNA tests. Well,
yeah,
we can
wouldn't
say
you
it.
Have to do like fingerprints or dental records or DNA tests or something to prove that that's actually him, especially if there's $1 million life insurance policy taken out on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
$1 million?
Uh-huh.
Seems like kind of a big deal. And, like, it just seems like the people at the insurance company that aren't Giovanni Ribisi are like, let him have his $1 million.
Right.
Like, we don't need to question him. It's very strange to me. Like, the logistics behind this movie were way off.
It'd be more believable if every single employee at the insurance agency felt like Giovanni Ribisi did, and one character felt the way the insurance company does. Like, it'd be more believable that 99% of the company believes that he's a fake, and
right.
they're gonna root him out.
Uh-huh.
But instead, you just got this one lone gunman, or one lone vigilante, deciding he's
who
going
doesn't
to...
want him to get the insurance money, and so he's like...
So he can get a promotion.
Jerk. Right.
That is a big hole. The fact that for $1 million policy, you're going to run some sort of DNA test. So even if his face gets chewed off by wolves, it's not going to matter. They're going to put a little more thought into it than that.
Or when he discovers that, oh, your brother had a big birthmark on his leg and this body doesn't, that Ron Williams can't just be like, oh, he got it removed. And that the insurance will be like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
like, they're not going to look into that or anything.
And it gets to the point where Robin Williams has, when anything does get brought up, Robin Williams has to frame Woody Harrelson. I mean, I'm sorry, frame Giovanni Ribisi to, like, beating him and harassing his family and all this stuff. And all of that is unbelievable as well.
The whole plot is unbelievable.
Yes. If you put that aside...
If you try really hard to put that aside.
If you put that aside, that there are a lot of plot holes, the acting in it is fine. And overall, it's an enjoyable movie.
Really?
Wow.
You thought it was enjoyable?
The
whole time you were complaining about it with me. Were you just trying to
show
support
for me? Yeah,
because you beat me.
Because if I disagree, you hit me in the
face.
Oh,
it was so terrible.
No.
It was like this horrible, like, small indie comedy that never makes it to movie theaters. And it had that feel.
It did have that feel.
It was like everybody's got quirks. Like, Alison Lohman is a psychic. Giovanna Gribisi, like, has his little thing going. Like, everybody has these quirks, and they just explain all of it away on, like, it's a small Alaskan town. All these things can happen.
What a collection of characters.
It's a small Alaskan town. Like, what a crazy mix of people. Okay.
That's, everything you just said is 100% true.
And then Woody Harrelson is, like, the most disgusting person.
In real life or in this movie?
In this, I guess in both, but I meant in this movie. And, like,
he plays Robin Williams.
There's not really a point to him.
He plays Robin Williams' brother, who is not actually dead, but Robin Williams is trying to cover up like he's dead because he just lives off the grid.
Yeah, he, like, shows up when he sees his name in the paper.
And so,
it just, like, I think it was a movie that is based very heavily on quirks and plot. And the quirks get annoying to me, and the plot doesn't work.
And the plot has too many holes. But I really enjoyed Holly Hunter in this movie. Nice. I thought this was like a good role for her.
I didn't.
I'm always happy with Giovanni Ribisi. I thought he played his role really well.
He was sort of like a straight man. I didn't really see him, like, how you could mess it up.
And then I liked
Robin
Williams.
I liked her. I liked Alison Lohman. She was the only one I liked.
And she has, like, four lines in the whole movie.
I know. Tell me about it.
All right. You hated it. And that's
Holly
fine.
Holly Hunter was so over the top.
Like, she was. If the whole movie had matched her, it would have been great.
No, the whole movie did match her, and it was
awful.
The
whole movie did not match her. You're talking out of your ass, woman.
I don't believe you like this movie. I think you're trying to be nice because you don't want Jess Rogers to feel bad that she chose a really shitty movie for me to watch.
You're projecting.
I really liked HUD. So, I feel fine saying that I hated this movie.
And I don't care.
I don't remember what it's called. Big White? Is that what it's called? What are you doing?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
I'm afraid to talk now.
Because I'm going to
If you're going to twist my words and say I mean something that I don't. I already said the movie, the plot is shitty. But I liked Holly Hunter. I liked Giovanni Ribisi. I liked Robin Williams.
Yeah, but when
I didn't like you very much.
When we turned it off, you called it a big pile of shit.
You called it a big pile of shit.
No, you did. I swear you did.
It is a big pile of shit. But there, I like the performances. Am I allowed to like the performances?
You are, but I don't believe you.
Shit's getting real.
You're, of course you're allowed, but I just don't believe you.
You don't believe that I like the performances.
Uh-uh.
Why?
Because you were complaining the whole time with me.
But not about the performances.
Okay.
Not even you.
Okay, but you just said that
movie was...
Not even
you talk shit about the performances.
No, the performances are fine.
All the performances are fine.
Except for Holly Hunter and Woody Harrelson and the two bad guys. Like, the two goons. They're all bad.
I liked the small one. The
really?
Skinny one from Oh Brother Where Art Thou?
Uh-huh.
I think that's what he's in.
Yeah.
I like him.
It
had a lot of character
actors.
You
just said it was really enjoyable, the movie.
Yeah, the plot has tons of holes, but I'd watch it again tonight.
Whoa. I'm going to make you watch it again tonight.
That's fine.
When we turn off this podcast and you're like, I'm just kidding, it was a pile of shit, I'm going to have you watch it.
It's not going to happen.
I just didn't want to hurt Jess Rogers' feelings.
It's not going
to
happen.
That's what you're here to say.
I have trashed Jess Rogers' picks before.
No, you haven't. You don't trash anyone's like I do.
No, no one trashes them like you do. You, like, make it personal. I'm not calling
no
Jess Rogers a
it.
Big old bitch, but that movie wasn't very good.
Why did I turn into, like, a New Jersey Jewish old lady?
That's who you are.
But, wait. For reals,
I'm not gonna let the
big... You hate movies just as much as I do.
That's not true.
There are some
I'm much more
that
accepting,
you hate.
But not as many. Not as frequently. And not with as much passion.
I just make it interesting.
Blind fury.
I just make it interesting for the listeners.
That's true.
If it was
I think
all
this is probably our most and probably last review.
If
sorry.
It wasn't so sorry. If it was like lukewarm, like you always have.
Sorry, Dan Heaton. We're not going to review The
no,
Silent Partner.
Listen, I like The Silent Partner.
I like The Silent Partner, too.
Let's
talk
about
it.
Yeah.
Stick around. You like how corny that shit was? Stick around. Like everything's fucking fine. Like I'm not going to have to do some husbanding right now.
I'm going to do some wifing, you know what that means.
Stick around.
All of it. That's all there is. Look, I saw him make the deposit.
Hey, you! What the hell?
All right. Don't you feel that that's why we're the most entertaining podcast?
Because we hate each other sometimes.
Because we hate each other's guts?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but...
I said sometimes.
I think it's going to get us...
Do you think sometimes or all the time?
I think sometimes.
Do we need to get a divorce?
A podcast divorce or a regular divorce?
Regular kind.
No.
Podcast kind?
I am looking for a podcaster. Daniel has test patterns.
So civil, though.
You should see on... you go get on iTunes, check out Test Patterns. New podcast from Daniel and Kyle Lomond, frequent writer-inners of the program. It's very good.
Yeah, so now he can't be on and be your little yes man.
Maybe I'll get with Simon.
He's not a yes man. He's just so nice. Like, about everything. Daniel's so civil and politically correct.
Then I look like the screaming banshee.
What? Did you call me a screaming
Stick around.
Banshee?
Do you think we're going to get the Lammy this year?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I think that most of the people who listen to our show don't know what Lammy is.
I don't think that's true. Half of our writer-inners are lambs.
Yeah, I think the writer-inners are, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's going...
Do you think there are people who listen that don't write in? I hope. There's only like five emails a week.
We do just fine.
So I think that like a lot of them don't know what Lammies are. But anyway, that doesn't mean that...
Because they're not movie bloggers.
We're not going to win.
But we're also not going to win for other reasons. Yeah. But we should because, I'm sorry, Jess and Rachel never go at each other like that. You never get that kind of drama.
No, they're so nice between to each other.
The respectable nice Canadian hatter, and why am I not nice
why
to
you? Why
are you
nice to me?
Why am I not nice to
you?
You
know, you're not very nice to me.
That's not what you said.
You did not make me breakfast in bed this morning. And I resent that.
I went to work.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the silent partner. Okay. This is incredibly boring.
And a very hard semester.
And it's 75% your fault.
You should be pampering me. I need pampering.
You don't deserve to
be
pampered. It
was my birthday on Saturday.
I'm this many.
He's flipping me off!
All right, silent partner, Dan
Oh,
Eaton.
This movie is awesome.
Public transportation
Not
snob.
Like that load of shit, Big White.
Tell me what you liked more. Which one did you like more? Did you like the Big White more or Peacock?
Big White.
More than Peacock?
Of course.
Are you kidding?
No.
Really?
Peacock was so bad. Which one did you like more?
I probably liked Big White more, but you just went off on Big White like it was like...
I know, I hate a lot of movies.
That's true. Which one? Timer or Big White?
Oh, I like Timer more.
Me too. Yeah. I like Timer a lot. But Silent Partner has nothing to do with any of those picks.
Because it's good. It has Elliot Gould.
Yes, and Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer, who's like young in it, sort of.
So I can't remember. I think it's 1977, mid to late 70s.
Between Von Trapp and Beginners.
Yeah.
Somewhere between there.
Yeah. And it's about Elliot Gould. It's during... one of my new favorite Christmas movies.
I've seen
it before, forgot that it was a Christmas movie. Elliot Gould works at a bank in a shopping mall and finds a note that says... I have a gun, give me all your cash.
And this part was confusing. So had the Santa robbed the bank earlier?
No. Okay. He had went in to rob the bank. Something stopped him. He forgot his note behind and just went back to work. And that happens later in the movie, too, where a kid runs up and talks to him just about he's before to stick him up. Mm-hmm. And he just decides, oh, I can't do it. I gotta get out of here.
And it actually wasn't... The actual note, it was he's like rubbing something on the paper and he sees
it's bank paper.
Yeah, and it's been like imprinted on.
That is not the technical name of that.
Bank paper?
Bank paper.
Yeah.
carbon paper.
So anyway, he knows that Christopher Plummer is going to rob a bank, and so he decides to rob it first, kind of. And then finagle it so that it looks like Christopher Plummer just took all that money. But really, Elliot Gould got the bulk of the money.
Right. So he takes $50,000 out of the register and...
Canadian dollars.
And just doesn't include it in the bank statement for that day.
But then they announce how much was stolen on the news.
And Christopher Plummer
finds out that he got kind of cheated.
Because when Christopher Plummer goes into... we should say, this was a bit of a stretch for me. Mm-hmm. He recognizes the handwriting on the note with the sign that the Santa holds right outside his window.
Because the G.
The G is the same. Elliot Gould is very observant, they say a few times in the movie.
A few times. You gotta cross that off the list.
Oh, you are very observant.
I'm like a little too observant, but right. Here we are.
But it's not like that insurance mistake in Big White.
But what takes off is an exciting game of cat and mouse between Christopher Plummer, who is insane in this
movie.
Yeah,
they show him, like, fondling a teenager and then beating the crap out of her just to show
how that's like how he is. Yeah, that's their way of being like, oh, you know that guy who just...
he's a loose cannon.
Yeah, who's a mall Santa. First of all, he's a mall Santa. I think all of this was... We know he gropes children and beats
them
up.
Didn't we just
and...
watch a movie where the guy was... Oh, darn it. The guy gets, like, mugged, or the guy gets thrown out of a car, or he jumps out of a car, and then the street corner Santa takes his wallet. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Then why are you laughing at me?
Because I don't know what you're describing.
Oh, well. So you know the movie where the street corner Santa takes the wallet out of the pocket of someone who jumped out of a car or gets pushed out of a car or something.
That does sound familiar.
Right in.
Frankly, my dear podcast at gmail.com. Now that's how you do a plug, baby.
All right, keep going.
Cat and mouse.
Oh, yeah, cat and mouse. So Plummer is crazy.
Yeah, and they have interesting ways of showing it. Gould is not crazy, but he is popular with the ladies. He's juggling this woman named Julie and a double agent who's working for Christopher Plummer at the same time. We will from now on refer to her as Fullbush. Whitney will explain why.
She does get really naked. Scott took about a 5-minute nap in the middle of this movie. And you see her totally full frontal nudity.
Slept right through
it. When he was asleep.
Woke up right after. I fell asleep for, like, that scene.
Yep.
But I'd seen the movie before.
Yeah, but you did.
So I had a permanent...
You remember that?
Permanent memory.
So this movie is so cool because Elliot Gould is supposed to be a good guy, but really he's kind of calculating and sneaky. And kind of everybody in the movie is kind of sneaky and awful except for Julie. Who's just sort of like...
The sad British
clueless,
sap.
Yeah, like who kind of just loves. Gets pushed around and dates married men, and it's very sad. But it's good.
It's really good.
I don't know,
good.
It's super violent. Like, there's one violent scene.
I don't want to give it away.
Really? Can we just give it away?
Well, we're going to give it away.
Okay. That Christopher Plummer is pissed at that girl who's playing secret agent, Fullbush. And he throws her into...
Excuse me. Agent Fullbush.
Agent Fullbush. Bush. And he throws her into Elliot Gould's aquarium, and the glass breaks everywhere, and she's really hurt, and he's trying to drown her in the aquarium, blah, blah, blah. He takes her over to the broken edge of the aquarium and proceeds to saw off her head with the glass of the aquarium.
Back and forth.
Yeah, just by her hair. Like, oh, it's horrible.
Whitney had to look away.
I had to look away. It's
she's
so,
doing the craziest
like,
stuff.
Slow and horrible. It's way worse than any, like, hostel or horror movie I've seen, because they don't cut away.
Yeah, it's...
And then Elliot Gould comes in to find her head in the aquarium. And, like, this is where you realize, or you realize this before this, but this is one of the scenes where you're like, he is not a good guy. Like, he picks up this girl who he was kind of starting to fall for. He picks her head up out of the aquarium.
This is Elliot Gould.
Puts it in a plastic bag and wraps her all up in a rug and throws her outside. Like, he's so... It's all for $50,000.
Which would be enough
Canadian
to,
dollars.
Canadian, which would be enough
still,
to pay off my student loans.
Like,
and
at that
so,
point... At,
what's a beheading?
At the point Christopher Plummer is outside your window calling you from the payphone, that's when
give
I just call
money.
The cops. Or give him the money,
just
yeah.
Give him the money.
That's, yeah, give him the money.
But then there's that thing where it's like...
Basically, I'll kill you anyway!
Yeah, how do I know you're not going to kill me after I give you the $50,000? You don't.
Right.
I'm still going to give him the $50,000. In fact, I'm going to clear out my bank account and say, like...
I'd rather go to jail. I'd just say...
For stealing 50 grand from a bank?
Uh-huh.
I'd kill Christopher Plummer. Things would get real.
Yeah.
Just kidding, I would
Does
die.
Does he ever try
I would
to
die
kill
in a heartbeat.
Christopher Plummer in it?
No, I don't think so. I can't remember any
That's
scene
how
like...
they keep him on the good He's side a... of things.
Yeah.
Elliot Gould's awesome.
There's a great scene where Elliot Gould has to identify him in a lineup. And he doesn't do it. Because he's in too deep.
Well,
because,
yeah,
lot like
the
movie
will
with
tell
LL
him.
Cool J and Omar Epps,
no,
in too
I don't
deep.
Think it's like that.
It's exactly like that. He's in too deep.
Anyway, Elliot Gould ends up getting all he wants, and Julie.
And I know, and I mean, the more exciting and more dynamic Fulbush, Agent Fulbush is dead, but...
Yeah, decapitated by a fish tank.
And thrown into a carpet, and he just washes the blood off his hands and is like, we'll be fine.
Yeah, I know. I'm really surprised he gets away with it.
But it's funny because this has a very similar plot to The Big White. A very similar plot.
How so?
Because the lead character is a good guy, only kind of, is scamming somebody out of a large sum of money.
And gets in too deep.
Gets in too deep with the actual bad guys who wanted money in the first place. And then at the very end, he ends up with the girl he likes and heads out. So the
difference between good movie and bad movie is Fulbush, so show me.
And decapitations.
Isn't there a decapitation in... Big White?
You know what? I think there is. Maybe. I guess the only difference is Fulbush.
Is there?
No.
There's violence, though. Like, there's you shove a body into a freezer and have to break the leg and stuff like that. I really think it's Fulbush.
I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah. Which makes sense to me.
Anyway, Silent Partner. This is my second time seeing it. It's awesome. Totally worth the recommend. Thanks, Dan Heaton.
Yeah,
from publictransportationsnob.com. And again, if you want to pick a movie for us to review in a future You Choose episode, email us at frankly my dear podcast@gmail.com.
But you can't just email us with your pick. Like, every time we promote this too much, people just send us emails.
My pick is this.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work like that. You gotta, like, comment on the show. Have what something substantial.
What did you think about the verbal domestic battery you witnessed this evening?
How awesome am I, and how great taste I have.
And how I'm a dog, and I mean nothing.
A dog?
Oh yeah, I forgot. You like dogs.
You are a dog.
You are a rat. All right, that's us.
That's us. Goodbye. Goodbye.